And hello, everybody. Welcome to this Chiefs versus Broncos edition of Chiefs Live. Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Chiefs. He's the 15-year National Football League veteran, the best long snapper to ever play in the game, Kendall Gammon. All right, here we go. People have waited for this game for at least 6 weeks, maybe longer than that. This team has done a great job with the Chiefs of just keeping the game in front of them, but now it's here. What do you think?
You know what? It's going to be fabulous. When you look at this game and what's going on, to go up to Denver and have a chance to do so many things, I mean, arguably one of the biggest division games at this point in time in the season ever for the Chiefs. So I'm going to tell you right now, to be able to come to that after a bye, that's huge also. Because the Chiefs, we talked about before we went in. We were resting. It was time to get a little rest. Mm-hmm. And the players needed rest, and they got it. And now they're back.
Yeah, and you can sense that they did get that rest. All right, need to deal with one issue first, because at the beginning of this week, Dwayne Bowe was arrested by Riverside Police earlier. Andy Reid addressed it earlier in the week. He said he's going to play, said he's going to start. There really is protocol here, and you right. played. I mean, there's NFL PA protocol, there's National Football League protocol, there's the legal protocol. We're just going to deal with this and move on, but I don't see it as a distraction. He's practiced this week. He's going to play. He's going to start. I don't see it as an issue for the game.
No, and Andy Reid said as much. He's not going to treat it as a distraction, so we won't either. I'll say this, though. The one thing that I think it does have a chance to do is spur Dwayne Bowe on, I'll be honest with you, because obviously he didn't want something like this to happen, and now you have a chance to go out on the field and maybe do some good things and not atone for it, but to make a difference in the game, and certainly with the production that he's had this season for different reasons, I think he would love nothing more than to go up and emulate some of the games that he's had in the past up at Broncos.
Other bit of news before we get into the meat of the game was the Chiefs made a roster move this week. Kyle Williams, wide receiver from San Francisco, claimed by the Chiefs off waivers, so John Dorsey adds another wide receiver to the mix, and this is Kyle Williams coming back to be with Alex Smith. Your thought on picking up another wide receiver?
Well, it's the fourth player, I believe, that we've picked up from the San Francisco 49ers, and that's not surprising with them having been in the big game last year. But I think it's huge because you throw somebody else into the mix. I expect him to be up because Chad Hall's been up these last several games. He can return punts if need be. Certainly we know that Dexter McCluster is who you're going to have to begin with, but you've got to have somebody else there. So I think he quite honestly brings some much-needed depth.
Again, probably best known for two drop punts in the NFC Championship game that might have cost Alex Smith a chance to go to the Super Bowl, but still a very capable player, and good to have him here at One Arrowhead Drive as the Chiefs continue to look for continued weapons at the wide receiver position. Chad Hall was released, by the way, to make room for Kyle Williams on the roster. All right, let's get into the matchups. And this looks like, from the outside, that this is your battle of the one force against the other. You've got the National Football League's best defense against the National Football League's best offense. It's the old something's got to give. Our ESPN had this graphic. Your thoughts when you see it?
Well, it's interesting when you see that. I'm not sure that you've ever seen a matchup where you've got these kind of numbers with the best offense going against the best D. Sack-wise, the Broncos, a lot has been talked about with their offensive line, the issues it's had, but when it comes down to it, the second least sacks for Peyton Manning. He's not been knocked down that many times. He's not been hurried that many times, which is not what I think most people realize. Defense, I think, of the Chiefs certainly has to get out after him. The third down percentage that Denver has right now, that's unreal. And I'm going to tell you right now, the Chiefs have to get off the field. They cannot let Denver do that this week, because if they do, it'll be a long day. But you're right. You got two rocks. Neither one's been moving the whole year. But something's going to have to give this year.
The other thing that's ridiculous is their red zone touchdown percentage. It's 79.5%. That is off the chain. We're going to get into some of that later in the show as we take a closer look at this Denver offense. But I want to ask you psychologically about having this big a game. Now, let's keep in mind, from an empirical standpoint, the 9-0 Chiefs against the 8-1 Broncos. This has not happened with two teams with this high a winning percentage meeting each other this late in the season since the AFL-NFL merger. We're talking some history here. But handling in the middle of a season a big game like this, listen, the world's not going to shut down if the Chiefs lose or win this game. How do you handle it if you're Andy Reid and the staff and as a player? Because you had big regular season games.
Well, I guarantee you Andy Reid's handling it like this, which is it's just another game. It only counts one. Certainly, if you were able to go up to Denver and steal one, that would be great. And I think they do have a real chance to do that. But again, if you lose, not all is lost. But the main thing is Andy Reid, each and every week, he talks about the fact that we've got to kick the ball off on Sunday, and we've got a chance to go 1-0, and that's what they're going to try to do this week.
Well, let's get some feedback here from Andy Reid and Alex Smith. And these two guys, we can say this about the first 9 weeks of the season. It has not been because of a lack. These guys are prepared, and they seem to handle it psychologically.
Listen, we have a ton of respect for their offense, for Peyton, for the things that they've accomplished this year. We understand all that. They've done a great job. So it's important that we prepare ourselves to play a good football team. So I think it's two good football teams playing each other. I think it's a good defense playing a good offense. And, that's what this is all about.
They're tests every week. This one, I mean, bigger because it's a division game, no question. And division implications, So these games are so important, especially as the year goes on and you get down towards the end of the line. These games are huge, so this one no different.
So Alex, it's not a respect thing that, in terms of proving the record and all of those kinds of things? No one's using it as
I mean, that's there, but I think the fact that it's a division game, division rival, division implications, I think that trumps everything.
Being around Andy Reid this week, he's relaxed. He's looking forward to this. I think I'm undervaluing, though, the experience that Andy Reid has and Alex Smith has had. They've had games like this.
Right.
And what they've meant to this team and this locker room and preparing for a game like this.
Right. I agree. And the one thing that I should have talked about earlier in terms of this game is it's going to be the closest thing you'll get to a playoff atmosphere without being a playoff. And the Chiefs certainly expect to go to the playoffs this year. I don't think they're talking about it. They're going one game at a time. It's the biggest cliche, but it's working, folks. But when it comes down to it, they've got to treat it that way. And that's huge because it's going to happen. And when you've got guys in the locker room like Alex Smith that have been in there, when you've got somebody like Andy Reid who was 14 years in Philadelphia and what he did there, and, of course, in Green Bay, he's been through it all. There's no situation he hasn't been through, Mitch. So I think it's very important that that type of leadership is going on right now. And you're right. I was just in the hallway a little bit ago, walked by him, just gave me a pat on the back, asked what was going on, and just went on about his merry business.
Yep. Just another week, and but he knows the opponent. He knows how big it is. Mm-hmm. But it's just what he brings as far as leadership. Now, let's talk about some of the matchups here, because if you look at Denver's receivers, first of all, Denver's got 371 points in 9 weeks. That's never been done in the National Football League. Demaryius Thomas, 55 catches. Eric Decker, 49 catches. You look at Demaryius Thomas, 55. Wes Welker, 53. All right, the matchups here. People keep saying if there is a team on paper that matches up to these great wide receivers of Denver, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. Your reaction?
You know what? I'm going to go all the way back to the Magnificent Seven when they picked up Marcus Cooper, because what he's allowed us to do now, Mitch, is to be able to put Brandon Flowers in the slot, who I think is the best person to match up with Wes Welker, quite honestly, I think, in the NFL. So it gives us a lot of different things. The deep secondary also, in terms of having Demps available, having Abdullah available. I mean, it's, to me, when they came in here, they realized, okay, there's always going to be three receivers for Denver on the field, four at times, and even five. So we've got to build a defensive secondary that values that issue, and that's what they've done. And again, I do think they match up as well as anybody on those sides. Now, the other matchup, which I certainly think is an issue, is the tight end, because right now what Julius Thomas is doing is fabulous. He may be a thorn in our sides for many years to come, so you're gonna have to figure out how to defend him. Will it be a DJ? Will Eric Berry come down and defend him? Will Kendrick Lewis defend him? And will you keep Eric Berry back so he can play over the top? Different things like that. I mean, there's gonna be a big chess match going on Sunday.
Yeah, Julius Thomas came into the season, one catch in his career for 5 yards. He's sitting on 42 catches, 9 touchdowns. He's another one of these former basketball players, played at Portland State. So he's in that kind of, Gates, Gonzalez,
Graham,
those kind of guys. All right, now, I'm going to ask you this before we go to the next point, and that deals with these matchups. It is astonishing to see how many yards after catch Denver receivers have. I looked at tape, looked at all 33 of Peyton Manning's touchdown passes. 24 of his 33, Kendall, were air throws of 9 or 10 yards or less. This is about yards after catch. Covering these guys, the matchups in tackling these guys is paramount. What about the matchup as covering and tackling?
tackling these guys. That's what you're talking about. You've got to bring them down. I talk about it all the time, is big plays to a degree are going to happen, but you've got to bring them down and allow the defense to line up and do it again. Because we see this whole year when the Chiefs defense gets squeezed a bit, they manage to somehow do some great things in that red zone. They've done a great job this year. Three fabulous goal line stands. You hope you don't have to deal with those this year, but it's things of that nature. And when you talk about it in terms of yards after the catch, what they're doing a fabulous job of, when you look at Denver, for the guys they have there that you mentioned, they're in the top 25 for yards after the catch. New Orleans, Detroit, Cincinnati, and Philadelphia, they all four have two guys in that top 25, but no more. So they're doing some special things, no doubt about it.
Now, in this matchup situation, and you mentioned Cooper being the valedictorian of the Magnificent Seven, allowing Flowers to move inside, it also tips you off on the unselfishness of this team, because you have to be unselfish if you're Brandon Flowers to move into that nickel slot. He's all about it.
I had to get used to it. Yeah. You know, I haven't been in there in a while. At first, it was rough. You know, just angles to the ball. Mm-hmm. Everything was just different, route concepts. But more and more through practice and games, I started gaining a better grasp of it, and I think I'm starting to get control of it. So I'm looking forward to going out there and playing one of the best slot receivers, if not the best slot receiver that ever played a game, you know, and just have my best game.
He's had to make an adjustment in his game, and that adjustment may lead to victories over Denver.
You're exactly right, and that's the thing. That's the unselfishness that I think Andy Reid has brought to the entire team and what's going on, because it has. It has been a big role by Marcus Cooper and what he's taken on and moving Brandon inside. But I think Brandon kind of likes that, because you get to do a little bit different things. I don't know if there's anybody that rushes the passer much better from that slot area. And, again, you're going to see some different pressure brought in very timely situations, because Peyton does do a nice job of picking things up and sniffing it out like a bird dog. But you're going to see the chess match go back and forth, and having him in the slot, I think, is a big deal.
Yeah, Bob Sutton's taking a big satchel of stuff to get on that plane to go to Denver. Now, we've not mentioned the other side of the football, but what's interesting, and this is where it came to mind with me, when the 09 Super Bowl at the end of the 09 season, when Sean Payton did a fabulous job in winning that game when the Saints beat the Colts. Because in that game, Sean Payton, as a head coach, said, it's not only your defense that plays Peyton Manning, your offense plays Peyton Manning, and your special teams play Peyton Manning. What about the Chiefs offensively in this game against a Denver defense, which at times has given up yards and points?
Well, they have, and when you look at what's going on, the one thing that they do so very well, and they didn't do such a good job right there, but is to play the run. They're number one, I believe, against the run this year. So the common thought is to say, well, you got to run the ball and keep it out of their hands. Well, you may not be able to do that, but you've got to move the ball and keep it out of their hands. You've got to hang on to the ball because you're never safe with Peyton Manning. He can score quickly, and, of course, that's going to come normally through a pass of 10 yards or less and somebody running for it. But I think it's paramount that they run the ball well enough that it sets up the pass. And again, the passing game for the Chiefs right now has not been what they want. When you look at the leading receiver in terms of Donnie Avery, he has a little less than 400 yards. Mitch, there's four guys on the Denver Broncos team that have more than 400 yards. So this is definitely a dichotomy when you look at everything that's going on. But you know what? When it comes down to it, it's donkey week on Sunday, and it doesn't matter. You just got to go up there, and you've got to get the job done.
I'm going to ask you about a couple critical areas as it pertains to the Kansas City offense. One is first down production and first quarter production. You've got to play downhill if you play the Denver Broncos, meaning there are some games, Kendall, in this league where the first snap of the game has the intensity of the last snap if the game is tied. What about first down production and coming right out of the gate as an offense?
Well, right now, when you look at the Chiefs and what they've done this year on first down, they're at the lower tier in terms of how many yards they're getting on first down. And the fact is, you need to be getting 4+ so you can get into that second medium to short position, because now you open up so much more for the offensive coordinator and Coach Andy Reid and what he wants to do. So I think that's paramount. That's got to be of utmost importance this week, no doubt.
The other one I want to bring up is red zone offense. Kansas City started out really well, but the numbers have slipped, let's be honest, over the last 4 weeks. And right now, Kansas City 26th in the NFL in red zone touchdown percentage. San Diego might have beaten Denver last week. They had three deep penetrations. Field goal, Nick Novak missed field goal. Whoops. Then they go down 21-6, and the game changes. red zone touchdown efficiency. How do you improve it? How do you get sevens and not threes?
You know what? I think you put a big focus throughout the week, and I'm sure that Coach Reed and that whole offensive staff, number one, studied it throughout the bye week. And then you dedicate times during practice each and every day because it's that important. And again, when you get three instead of seven, that just doesn't work when you're playing a team that's putting on as many points as the Denver Broncos are. So it's got to be a big focus, no doubt about it. And when it comes down to it, I think Coach Reed is going to want to get as many people involved in the offense as possible because – and I say that in the passing game side of things because they do give up yards in the passing game. When it comes down to it, also, you're going to have to take advantage of that facet.
Here's what's interesting to me when I've listened to all of the pundits talk, whether it's locally in Denver or Kansas City or nationally. This game, of course, is the national spotlight game. You know who's not getting talked about hardly at all? Is Jamaal Charles. And he's one of the leaders in the NFL in yards from scrimmage. He has been incredible, but there's been a lot of discussion. But Charles had his coming out party in 2009 against this team when he was on his way for a 300-yard game, one of the greatest performances in NFL history. Jamaal has had big games against Denver, not just this game. What about Jamaal?
Well, you know what? I think the big thing in my mind is the fact that it's on a national stage and he's had a week to rest. And let's be honest, coming into those last couple games before the bye week, he was using about a case and a half of tape to keep him together. And now that's going to go down to four or five rolls. So that's a good thing. His feet should be healed and feeling fine. And I think he understands the magnitude of this game. Quite honestly, I think the offensive line understands the magnitude of this game when it comes down to it with that also in terms of that defensive line of Denver, which has done some good things, and they're going to have to control them to have a chance also.
Jamaal loves games like this, and he's looking forward to it, as is everybody else in the Chiefs' kingdom. They've waited for this for a long time. Well, there have been a scrapbook full of memories when the Broncos play the Chiefs. Yep, it's Donkey Week. When we come back, we're going to give you just a little taste of that as we go back in time and show you some of the most memorable moments, for the Chiefs anyway, in this series on this Chiefs-Broncos edition of Chiefs Live. Welcome back to this Chiefs Broncos or Donkeys edition of Chiefs Live. Mitch Holtis with you along with Kendall Gammon, the snapper. Okay, you played for this team for a long time. You grew up in the Chiefs Kingdom. I grew up in the kind of western part of the Chiefs Kingdom. And the further west you get, it gets even a little more intense with this rivalry. But your thoughts overall on the rivalry and some of your moments?
I'm going to tell you right now, in the years that I played, 15 in this league and, of course, 7 with the Chiefs, I didn't come out of a win, come out of Denver, rather, with a win very, very often. That's a hard place to play. I go back to the old Mile High and what is now the new Mile High to me. It's just a tough place, and, of course, that's because it's a good team. But, you know, I just remember some of those times where in general, the big special teams plays that happened, the defensive side of the ball making some big plays, offensively going down at the end of the game to score some touchdowns to win. Just in general, though, there's a very big dislike between Denver and Kansas City. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you say it's a little bit farther west, but I'd say it's right here as well, because I'm going to tell you right now, it is real.
It is real. It was real in 1969, the year the Chiefs won their only Super Bowl in a pivotal game against the Broncos. Love it. This is at Old Municipal Stadium, and 24-17, Lou Saban's team has made it a one touch. They're going to onside kick, and there goes your man, Bobby Bell.
That is amazing. When you can do that and be the type of athlete he is, and I mean, you see Bobby to this day walking around, and I'm just like, he's big right now, so I can't imagine what he was like back then, but you talk about linebackers and the difference they made. That one was in the special teams, but I certainly think our linebackers on the edges in Holly and Houston are going to have to make a difference this coming Sunday.
Bobby Bell was way ahead of his time, folks. And yes, his game would translate to today. Another time was the old John Elway, and John Elway has taken years off Chiefs fans' lives with his great comebacks. But in 1994, Joe Montana's last year in Kansas City as a rookie announcer, I had the chance to call this game, but it looked like certain defeat. Uh-oh, Montana magic. Willie Davis is a current scout for the Kansas City Chiefs. Willie makes this catch. I call him right front pylon.
You know what? I wasn't there for that game, obviously, but I was there for a game not too long after that when I was with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Joe happened to throw a touchdown pass in overtime to beat us in the playoffs. So it's so deflating when you've got a play like that going on against you. And again, to do what he did, where he did it, and how he did it, that's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and that play-by-play in Canton, Ohio, I'd show you what that was thought of as Elway versus Montana on a Monday Night Football stage. Now, this one you were real close to, because in 2003, it's one of the most famous returns all time in Kansas City Chiefs history. Dante Hall, the human joystick, lived up to the nickname, and now the second longest punt return, but it led to a one-point Chiefs victory and a knockdown dragout win at Arrowhead Stadium.
And then I think about the Denver Bronco game.
It was late in the fourth quarter. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs, they were down by six. It was Denver. It was the fifth game of the season. They were 4-0. And this was a team that hadn't had a start like that in a while.
That picture remains in my mind very vividly. And I think about it often.
I remember writing that Dante Hall came to the stadium and changed in a phone booth. You know, somehow he was able to conceal his cape and his Superman suit.
Dante fielded the ball at about the 5-yard line, which, of course, coaches always shudder when a player fields the ball inside the 10-yard line.
When he fields a punt back inside the 10, and I'm yelling to myself, Dante, don't feel that, don't feel that. He runs back to about the 1-foot line.
You never get a punt and just simply turn around and start running backwards. And he ran 15 yards behind the point where he got the ball.
I just knew we were kind of stalling our offense, and I just went back to the backyard days of football.
Makes the first man miss, looking to try to get to the outside. He's in trouble, surrounded. Now he gets to the left side. He's got nobody but the kicker in front of him. Hauls up the left side, 35-40. A block on Norm. He's at the 35-30. Dante Hall's going to do it again. The human joystick with the touchdown. Kansas City, 92 yards.
Wow.
Okay, that'll bring chills to you. You were standing there and seeing it. I was calling it. And Dante, one of our favorites, great guy, in an incredible moment in Kansas City Chiefs and Broncos history. Chiefs go on to win that game. Okay, let's talk about Peyton Manning here a little bit. He's 7-1 against the Chiefs in the regular season. The only time you were in for the one time he lost, it was in 2004. But they also two playoff wins against the Chiefs. So he's 9-1. Andy Reid's 1-4 against Peyton Manning. The one time he beat him was after a bye week in 2010. And Bob Sutton, Chiefs defensive coordinator, has faced Peyton 7 times and beaten him 3 times. So your thoughts on Peyton Manning, because I went back and looked. I mentioned this earlier, but of his 33 touchdowns, 24 of his throws have been 10 yards or less. What do you see in the 2013 version of Peyton Manning?
Well, we're going to take a look at him. We're going to break some film down with that. And when you look at what he's doing this year and how he's doing it, the fact is he's lost some of the ability to throw the ball deep, but that hasn't deterred him in a bit. I think we're going to bring it up here in a minute in terms of this play right here. And all four of these, Mitch, are from San Diego last week, and we'll let this run. This is interesting. He's in the shotgun, gets it right there. Now, I want to stop that. I should stop it a little bit late, but in general, that pass was 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And the other thing that I think you have to note with that is that he has these guys out in front of him. This is Demaryius Thomas. And these guys coming over here, the offensive linemen, and really it looks set up to where he's gonna go in for a touchdown right there, as easy as it could be. But San Diego does a nice job of rallying, but he takes it north and south and just splits the defense and does a fabulous job. And when you look at that ball, it did not travel past the line of scrimmage. It was minus 2 yards, but it went down as a 32-yard touchdown pass. And again, those guys in front of him doing a great job offensive line-wise. So you've got that one. We go to the next one. And this one, as it gets right side up, it's a work in progress, folks. As we go back with this one, this guy, but the one guy who is not a work in progress right now is Julius Thomas, and this is what we're going to see with him. And I think this is interesting because they just flat lose him. This linebacker right here, he has him in coverage. And how he manages to lose him, I don't know. But we'll watch and we'll let this one run.
This is Manti Te'o, I'm pretty sure.
Yep. Again, about 4 yards, and then he just takes off. And, folks, that's not a wide receiver. That is a tight end running down, and maybe some poor angles taken by the defensive backs, but he just shocks him. And, again, all you're going to see is he's just going to slip right out here, and Manti bites on this play-action fake coming across the ball just enough, and you see the result of it.
And the athleticism of Thomas. Again, he was a basketball player at Portland State. When he turns it on, he's got another gear. Impressive plays. Again, these are short passes that turn into long plays. And a big part of Peyton Manning's 33 touchdowns this year, which, again, he's on the cusp of setting an all-time NFL record. But it goes back to your point of the importance in alignment, tackling. But sometimes you have to align in a microsecond.
And that's the thing, is he's so good at seeing it. We had two other plays, but they're upside down, and I don't know if you guys can translate with that how you do them. But when it comes down to it, he had another one where San Diego brought six on the blitz, and he figured out where Demaryius was right away, hits him on a slant route for a touchdown, and then also runs a star route where they clear everybody out, and they give Demaryius from the hash to the sideline to work. And I'm going to tell you right now, that's not fair for anybody. So they do those type of things. And when you look down at it, you had a pass for minus 2 yards, you had a pass for plus 3 yards, another pass for 4 yards, and then one more for 11 yards. That's the long one. So you have 16 yards in the air, which count as 141 passing yards and 4 touchdowns. That's the dichotomy we're talking about. And that's what goes back to your thesis at the beginning of the show, which is, they're going to complete short passes, but you have to tackle. You have to bring them down. Give the defense a chance to line up and stop them again.
And you have to align properly, and you've got to put enough pressure on him. You mentioned that he doesn't have a lot of sacks. There's only 13. Only Detroit has fewer. But you still have to disrupt him. And Jacksonville did it. Indianapolis did it, helped them win the game,
right.
And we saw San Diego do it last week.
Well, they didn't. We haven't talked about it, but it is a factor in terms of his ankle and what's going on there.
Yeah.
Ankle sprain, high ankle sprain, they sound similar. They're anything but. A high ankle sprain is very, very serious. I don't think he was unbelievably mobile to begin with. I think this makes him less mobile. I think that's an advantage for the Chiefs, naturally. And when you've got Justin Houston and Tamba Hali, who have combined, I believe, for one sack in the last two games, are hungry to get it going, that's got to happen. You've got to put pressure on Peyton Manning this week.
And he likes to go in minimum protection. That's just what he does. Gets the three wide, that's how he rolls. Well, our Rachel Sanchi also rolls on with this focus point to get her thoughts on the key items of this big showdown, the biggest game in the NFL so far this season.
The bye week is over and the big game is finally here. All eyes will be on the undefeated Chiefs as they travel to Denver this weekend for what many are calling the game of the year. Sunday night's winner will be in the driver's seat for the AFC West crown, so the Chiefs will be in the spotlight in week 11. Here are the three focus points for this week's game. First, the Broncos scoring offense. Denver is on a historic pace through 10 weeks of the season. totaling 371 points and leading the league in scoring by more than 10 points per game. What you might not know is that through 10 weeks, the Broncos have only played two top 10 scoring defenses. This week, they'll face the top scoring defense in the NFL. The Chiefs have yet to give up more than 17 points to an opponent this year, the first team to accomplish that feat since 1977. Second, the Chiefs' defensive backfield. Wes Welker made headlines last March when he inked a two-year deal with the Broncos, bolstering an already excellent Denver wide receiving core. The Chiefs responded with the additions of cornerbacks Sean Smith, Dante Robinson, and Marcus Cooper in the offseason. Those moves have paid off big, as the Chiefs have held opposing quarterbacks to a league-worst 53.5% completion percentage through the first nine games of the season. The matchups in the passing game should have a big impact on Sunday's outcome. Finally, Peyton Manning's injured ankle. Manning hobbled off the field last Sunday after the Broncos' 28-20 win over the Chargers with an apparent ankle injury. The Broncos signal caller was on the receiving end of several hard hits throughout the game and was obviously in pain as the clock wound down. MRIs showed no extensive damage earlier this week, but Manning's durability will continue to be a storyline as the season goes on. This is just the first test of a grueling second half of the season for the Chiefs. And it appears as though the battle for home field advantage in the playoffs will be fought between the Chiefs and the Broncos over the next several weeks. And it all gets started on Sunday night.
Yes, it does. And so on this Thursday edition of Chiefs Live during Donkey Week, Bronco Week, we have yet to mention, we want to close the show talking about special teams. And I apologize to you, being a great special teams player, that you always kind of wait for it parenthetically. 44 touchdown drives this year by the Denver Broncos. 17 have been 56 yards or less. Trendon Holiday, punt and kickoff returns. Let's just start with him. What about him? Because he can be explosive.
Well, he can be explosive. And when you look at him, he has a punt return for 81 yards. He has a kickoff return for 105 yards, both for touchdowns. So he's very explosive. But again, at 5'5", 170 pounds, very diminutive in size, which kind of reminds you a little bit of Dante Hall to a degree. But the fact is, he's put the ball on the ground in the past, and he doesn't always carry the ball in the proper hand. And when I say that, when he goes up the left side, the ball will not be in the outside hand where it should be. It may be in the right side. So now if the ball gets hit, it has a chance to come out and stay in bounds as opposed to going out of bounds. So that's very big. But the thing that you alluded to is the fact that their special teams and setting up with field position. I think field position will be so very important this coming Sunday. And certainly you got the brothers Colquitt going at each other. And when you look at Mr. Colquitt on Denver's side, the brother averaging 4.66 seconds of hang time, which is second in the NFL, and that is fabulous. I'm telling you, now obviously the rarefied air that you talk about in Denver, the ball's going to stay up there a little bit longer, but that makes a big difference. So they've got to continue to do some good things, because against Buffalo last week, they did a great job in coverage. It all comes into play. They need to set up some short fields, in my opinion.
And touchbacks. Ryan Succop's been awesome at it all year. Prater kicking mile high above sea level. He's got 51 touchbacks. 36 have been at home. He's had 39 home kicks and 36 have been touchbacks. So teams are going to get it at the 20.
Right.
Okay. And the Colquitt boys do their thing. And Dustin pinning him inside the 10, he's been ridiculous with that. And that's what does not show up in the stat sheet.
Well, you're right. He has six inside the 10 this year. I forget the number inside the 20, but it's great. And you go back to the Buffalo game, inside the 20, Buffalo had scored one time inside the 20. So he was giving them a 3% chance to score when he pinned him inside the 20 four different times. So things like that go unnoticed sometimes by a lot of people watching the game because they watch O and D. But when you talk about the team and the coaches, they know exactly. And I watched, I was in there right after the game, and Dustin Colquitt, Ryan Succop, they're getting high fives from everybody.
Here we go. We've waited for a long time. Can't wait to get on that plane and head to this game. It's the Broncos against the Chiefs. He is the snapper. He's all about big games. The best long snapper to ever play in this league. I'm Mitch Holter's voice of the Chiefs. Yeah, it's Donkey Week, and it's on.